translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada and Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Just to see the chief of the descendants of King Bharata, Bhishma, all the great souls in the universe, namely the rishis amongst the demigods, brahmanas and kings, all situated in the quality of goodness, were assembled there. Purport. The rishis are those who have attained perfection by spiritual achievements. Such spiritual achievements can be earned by all, whether one is a king or a mendicant. Bhishma Dev himself was also one of the Brahma rishis and the chief of the descendants of King Bharata. All rishis are situated in the quality of goodness. All of them assembled there on hearing the news of the great warrior's impending death. I'll read the verse again. Tatra brahma shaya sarve deva shayascha sattama raja shayascha tatra san drashtam bharata pungavam. Just to see the chief of the descendants of King Bharata, Bhishma, all the great souls in the universe, namely the rishis amongst the demigods, brahmanas and kings, all situated in the quality of goodness, were assembled there. Om Gyanata Mirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshura Minitam Jaina Tasma Shri Gadave Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Mam Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pashtaya Bhutaleshwata Shiva Swami Tanamani. So this is a very interesting verse, as devotees usually say when they start giving Bhagavatam class, and a very interesting chapter. Perhaps as devotees we just take it for granted. Yeah, Bhishma Dev lying on a bed of arrows on the battlefield. Krishna is going to come and see him. He's going to leave his body at the time when he decided. He's going to go back to Godhead. We know the drill. We know the situation. We've heard it quite a few times. But actually, if we think about it, and if we look at it in the context of what Srila Prabhupada is saying in the purport, then actually it's a very profound situation. Srila Prabhupada is making the point in the purport that all of these Brahma rishis who came to see Bhishma Dev, everybody is coming together to see his departure. They've all come to see Bhishma Dev because he's such a great soul. Similarly to when the Srimad Bhagavatam begins, well, it's actually in the beginning of the second canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, but when Shukadeva Goswami is going to begin to speak to Parikshit Maharaj, then all the different sages are coming together from all over the universe. Shishi Radha Gokula Nanda Ki Jai. So similarly, they know that there's a big event happening. It's not a wedding at the manor, but it's Bhishma Dev leaving his body. So everybody's coming together because this is a big event. Bhishma Dev is a great personality, a great warrior. He was one of the Vasus originally, very famous personality, and Krishna's there personally. This is a great moment. So everybody is gathering to see what's happening. We can see the difference in between Dwapara Yuga and Kali Yuga. In Kali Yuga, when do people come together in big numbers for an event? In England, usually it's like a rave, yeah, or a football match. Everybody comes together. It's the FA Cup final or some stupid match between two football teams. But here, people would come together when it's some important spiritual occasion. And Prabhupada makes the point. The main point that I took out from the PowerPoint is that all of these rishis are situated in the mode of goodness. And Prabhupada says that anybody can attain the mode of goodness, whether it be a king or a mendicant, and then go further from there. And I'll speak about that point. But just to get there, then let's see what the situation is in the Bhagavatam right now. That Bhishma Dev is here, lying on a bed of arrows. He's not dying. I think it says that the blood had already flowed from his body. That's why he was pure enough to speak to Yudhishthira Maharaj about Varnashram and about Dharma, because he'd been eating the grains fed to him by the Kurus. So he was just there, and he was just waiting for the auspicious time for him to leave his body. Astrologically, but But especially when Krishna was going to be there present, so he could look at Krishna and then he could leave his body at that time. So Bhishma Dev is lying now on the bed of arrows. He's been speaking to Yudhishthira Maharaj, which is a big section of the Mahabharata when he's speaking to Yudhishthira. And how did we get to this point? That Bhishma Dev, he is one of the Mahajans, but he didn't lead a particularly conventional life. Why is he lying on a bed of arrows? Because he's been fighting against the Pandavas, because he's been trying to kill Krishna. He's been trying to kill Krishna's relatives. And we know the story, but if we can actually just try and imagine that there's Krishna, there's the Pandavas and the Pandavas' allies, and they're fighting with the Kauravas. Both sides are being destroyed. Arjuna's son has also been killed, Abhimanyu. And it's not a play thing. They're actually killing each other there on the battlefield. And Bhishma Dev has been killing thousands and hundreds of thousands, probably millions of the warriors on the Pandavas' side. And he also took a vow to kill the Pandavas themselves. And killing the Pandavas means he's going to kill them. He's going to tear them apart. They're not going to be there anymore. And he took a vow that on this day, then I'm going to kill all of the Pandavas. And it was at that point that Krishna took part in the fight in a very clever way. He didn't take up any weapons, but he took up the wheel of the chariot to defend Arjuna when Bhishma was about to destroy him. So we can see it wasn't an exactly conventional past for Bhishma Dev. He's a pure devotee, he's a Mahajan, he's going to go back to Godhead, he's Krishna conscious. But up until now, in the last few days of the war, he's been trying to kill Krishna and Krishna's associates. And this is a very amazing thing if we think about his relationship with Krishna. We know it's in chivalrous rasa, virya rasa. And we have all of these different rasas, shantaras, dasyaras, sakyaras, vatsaliras, and madhuryaras. But we also have the secondary rasas. And Bhishma Dev, his devotion was influenced by this virya rasa. And Krishna enjoyed that. Krishna enjoyed the fact that Bhishma was attacking him, that he was fighting with Krishna. Actually, he even injured Krishna. Krishna was bleeding. And it seemed like Krishna became even more beautiful by his injuries, by his wounds on the battlefield. So it's very deep, amazing thing that if you explain this to the regular theist, it'd be very difficult to understand. Although we experience this in our lives on a day-to-day basis, not that we injure each other and enjoy the fact that one another are bleeding, but at least amongst men, I think it's kind of a known thing. If there is, say, a football match, it's like this kind of pitting oneself against somebody else, this competition, this kind of fight in a kind of friendly way. There's a taste to that. There's an enjoyment to that. And Krishna is the original person who enjoys that. So he's enjoying that rasa with Bhishma Dev. So Bhishma Dev's situation is very interesting, unconventional. There's a whole story to how he came to this world. He was one of the Vasus, and this is a different story about how they were going to steal Gautama Muni's cow, and they became cursed to take birth in this world. The other Vasus went back earlier, but Bhishma Dev had to stay for longer. But it brings up the point that not every situation is black and white. Not every situation in Shastra, and especially in our own lives, especially in Kali Yuga, is so black and white. There's a famous verse that I used to know by heart. Tako patishta shutayo vibhinna nasave shuryasya matam nabhinnam dharmasya tatvam nihitam guhayam mahajano yena gata sapanta. The translation is, dry arguments are inconclusive. A great personality whose opinion does not differ from others is not considered a great sage. Simply by studying the Vedas, which are variegated, one cannot come to the right path by which religious principles are understood. The solid truth of religious principles is hidden in the heart of an unadulterated, self-realized person. Consequently, as the Shastras confirm, one should accept whatever progressive path the Mahajans advocate. It's quite a long poetic verse, but a couple of the points in there are that it's difficult to understand exactly what the religious path is all the time. It says there that it's very difficult to understand the Vedas. I don't think it's referring specifically to Srimad Bhagavatam or Bhagavad Gita, where the message is more direct and simple. But the Vedas have many different corollaries, lots of different details, so they can be difficult to understand. But even in this age, even with the Srimad Bhagavatam, even with the Bhagavad Gita, then we need the help of sadhus, we need the help of gurus, shiksha and diksha gurus, to help us understand how to apply these teachings in the here and now. Because if we didn't have those explanations, then how would we understand it? How would we understand this, that Bhishma Dev, yesterday he was trying to kill Krishna and the Pandavas, and now they're all standing around him, worshipping him, and he's going to go back to Godhead. Now how do we understand that? But through Srila Prabhupada's genius and through his explanations, then it becomes clear. And there's so many stories like this in the Srimad Bhagavatam. I used to find it very interesting that there's stories about, what's one example, Chitraketu. That when Maharaj Chitraketu, he went and he saw Shiva giving Bhagavatam class, and Parvati was sitting on his lap, and then he laughed. And he said, how wonderful this is, you know. Shiva's speaking to all of these renowned sages, sannyasis, rishis, demigods, munis, and his wife is sitting on his lap. Like if somebody gave Bhagavatam class and their wife was sitting on their lap, it would be difficult to take it seriously. You'd have to have a very high regard for that devotee for him to, you know, special compensation for this devotee. When he gives class, he can have his wife sitting on his lap. So, but those people in that assembly, they understood that this is Shiva, he is pure. But when Chitraketu Maharaj saw that, he thought it was amazing. But in the Bhagavatam, there's different purports. That some purports say that he made a mistake, that he was laughing, and he became cursed by Parvati for that. And then in some purports, it says he didn't make a mistake. He was amazed, and he was like thinking, he was just glorifying Shiva, how wonderful this is that he can do that, nobody else could do that. So there's many situations like that in the Bhagavatam, and it's not, there's a reason why these things are in the Bhagavatam, to help us to fine-tune our discrimination, for us not to be fanatical, and for us to realize that in my own life also that things aren't always so clear-cut, especially in Kali Yuga. If these situations are happening in Dwapara Yuga or previous ages when the atmosphere was so much purer, then we can understand in Kali Yuga there's going to be lots of interesting situations. And there's many, many examples. My son, they just went out a minute ago, he's 3 years old, but he's growing up in a devotee environment and he's hearing about the philosophy. Like I remember we were talking last year about who's God and who's not God. So he knows that Krishna is God, but then he knows also that Vishnu is God and Korma and Nrsingadev. And then he was, I think he was asking, he was about 2.5, he was asking who's Buddha. And I was saying he's a Shakti Vaishavata. So explaining this to him, and he can understand it, that he's not God, but he's like, he has God's energies. So we're explaining these things to him, and we have these intricacies in our Krishna consciousness movement, which we have to try and understand. And these points are there, as Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami said, not to avoid, not to forget about and think, I don't get it. Then ask questions, and if you ask questions and if you try to understand these things, then you'll become stronger in your Krishna consciousness. And the Bhagavatam is full of these situations. Oh yeah, that's why I brought up my son, because he knows that there's devotees and he knows that there's demons. That's kind of the two categories. which is there in Bhagavad Gita as well, actually, in Bhaktivedanta and the demons. But then there's personalities like Prahlad Maharaj. So I say to him that Prahlad Maharaj is a devotee, but he's in a demon family. So he can understand that as well. He's a devotee, but his family are demons. And there's many situations like that in the Bhagavatam for us to also try and understand that Prahlad Maharaj, what is he? He's a devotee. Okay, but is he in a devotee family? No. Does he associate with demons? Yeah. Is he the king of all of the demons? Yeah, he's the king of all of the demons. And that means that he's associating with them all of the time. I mean, he's preaching to them when he goes to school, but he's not a brahmachari, he's not coming to the temple and probably giving Bhagavatam class except for when he's preaching. He's dealing with all of those different things, but he's pure because he's a pure devotee. And Vibhishan is another example. He's Ravana's brother. Ravana's pretty impious living entity, but Vibhishan was a pure devotee, and that was also difficult for Ram's associates to accept, that can we trust him because he's coming from this background? But yeah, you can, because his motivation is pure. And another good example of this is Bali Maharaj. And this is very interesting, because Bali Maharaj was the king of the demons, and he was associating with demons, but he was a pure devotee. And when Vamanadev came, when Vamanadev came and he asked for the three steps of land, then not only is this there that Bali Maharaj is a devotee, but he's a demon at the same time, and he's in charge of all the demons, and the demons are trying to destroy the demigods. But Vamanadev comes, and he's also disguised, and he says to Bali Maharaj that, give me three steps of land. Bali Maharaj says, sure, of course I'll give you three steps of land. And his guru comes to him and says, don't do it, because he's Vishnu and he'll take everything away. And what does Bali Maharaj do? Although he's a demon, then he understands that my spiritual master is not giving me correct instructions to go back to Godhead, so I'll reject his instructions. So this is a demon who is exercising such fine discrimination. And this is a lesson to us, that we have to understand in our lives how to discriminate and understand things on a deeper level. Just because somebody's dressed as a devotee doesn't necessarily mean they're a devotee. Prabhupada made this interesting statement that there's many demons dressed as devotees in our Krishna consciousness movement. That's a very interesting statement. I'm not going to make any commentary to that, but Prabhupada says that. And similarly, we can understand that there's many people who aren't necessarily dressed as devotees, who can have devotional sentiments. I'm sure every Sangatan devotee has experienced them when they go out on book distribution. There'll be some question in their mind, or there's some particular situation, you're not sure how to deal with it. And some total non-devotee may even be in the middle of a pub, just tells you exactly what the solution is, exactly what you have to do, and it's Krishna speaking through him. So Krishna is actually everywhere, within the hearts of everybody, in every situation. And just because we're in the temple, or just because I'm wearing a dhoti, or just because I'm associating with devotees, also doesn't mean that you can't be in Maya at that time. I remember one time I was in the Bhagavatam class when I was a brahmachari in Soho Street, and one Mataji was giving class. She's a prominent shiksha guru in our movement, and she was talking about marriage, about how, I can't remember exactly what she was saying, but she was heavily emphasizing that devotees should get married in general, unless you're like a nitya siddha and you've never even looked at a woman, then you should get married. That was kind of the mood. And then when I came out of the class, I was kind of like thinking, maybe I should get married. Just because she was saying that, like, I didn't have any particular inclination at that time. And I spoke to my shiksha guru, and he said, you're in Maya. And I said, but all I did was go to Bhagavatam class. And he said, anyway, you have to discriminate. Even when you go to Bhagavatam class, then you have to discriminate what's Krishna conscious and what's not. And I'm sure devotees also experience that if you go to Bhagavatam class every day, then it's not that one day the devotee says, the most important thing in the universe is to learn shlokas every day. And then you go to the Bhagavatam class the next day and the devotee says, the most important thing is to be humble and serve the devotees. And then the next day the devotee says, the most important thing is not to be falsely humble. The important thing is to be bold and to be honest in Krishna consciousness. And if you don't know how to imbibe these instructions and, as Prabhupada said, fly your own plane in Krishna consciousness, then you're going to turn into more than a schizophrenic, because you're going to have a different personality every single day that you hear the Bhagavatam class. So the Bhagavatam is helping us to become mature in Krishna consciousness, to develop discrimination, and to become mature devotees. And this verse is very interesting, Tako Pratishtha Shrutayo Vibhinna, that we have to follow the example of mature devotees, of advanced devotees, because if we try and figure it out for ourselves, it's very difficult. Like, I'll just mention one controversial topic is about the ahimsa milk topic. Like, at the moment, and it's a controversial topic in ISKCON at the moment, because there's, like, I just came from Hungary, there it's a vegan temple, there's no like outside milk offered there, even to the deities. And there's different gurus in our movement, like Radhana Swami, as far as I know, Srila Shivaram Maharaj, Devamrita Maharaj, and I think more sannyasis as well, who are ahimsa vegans now. And it's interesting, because when Prabhupada was here, he didn't say anything about it. In fact, I just read a pastime with him when he was in San Francisco in the early days. And Janaki Mataji was there, and she was making whipped cream. She was making it because Prabhupada never had it before. So she was making it, and this is also pretty unconventional, that Prabhupada came into the kitchen when she was making it, and he said, "What's that?" And she said, it's whipped cream. And she put her finger in the cream and put it out to Prabhupada, and Prabhupada licked it off her finger. And he said, "Oh, that's really good." So Prabhupada was drinking milk products. He was using milk products at that time. He didn't say anything about not using it, as far as I know. He condoned our offering it to the deities. But as time goes on, as ISKCON develops, as ISKCON is supposed to develop, and we're supposed to develop farm communities and protect cows and look after cows and encourage that, then we can hire our standards. And as vegans these days are saying, "I'm not drinking milk because the cows are exploited," and my spiritual master is making the point that we don't have an argument for that. How can we can't defeat it? That, yeah, we offer it to Krishna. Okay, so we offer it to Krishna, and then we indirectly condone the abuse of these cows who are very dear to Krishna. So I don't want to make any heavy statements about this, but I'm just bringing it up as a point that things may change in time. And if we don't, we have to get the opinion and follow the opinion of great souls to understand what direction to go in. Otherwise we become rather clueless if we just have to figure out for ourselves what are we supposed to do. So Srila Prabhupada, coming back to the point of coming to the mode of goodness, Prabhupada is saying that such spiritual achievements can be earned by all, whether one is a king or a mendicant. Bhishmadev himself was also one of the Brahma Rishis and the chief of the descendants of King Bharata. All Rishis are situated in the quality of goodness. So this is a very important, simple point that we can see clearly in Krishna consciousness, that unless we come to the quality of the mode of goodness, then we're not going to be able to make very much progress in Krishna consciousness. And what are the qualities of the mode of goodness? Maybe devotees can tell me some. Peacefulness, truthfulness, cleanliness, simplicity, control of the mind, knowledge, detachment, control of the senses. Yeah, we covered that verse in the 18th chapter. What is it? 1842. From Bhagavad Gita, the qualities of a Brahman. Shamodama, Tapasho, Chamkshanti, Rajavamivacha. We listed pretty much all of those. Yeah, and it's control of the senses, control of the mind. It's unavoidable. The mind is always trying to look for, you know, maybe in this situation I don't have to be in the moment. I can just like ease it quicker, easier. I can find a quick solution in this situation. But the mode of goodness is, no, you have to pay the price. You have to do the right thing. You have to get up early in the morning. You have to be clean. You have to study the scriptures. You have to be disciplined in spiritual life. You can't get away from it. Although our society is, not ISKCON, but the outside society is all about cutting corners, getting something done quicker, making it easier, avoiding the extra effort, and indulging your senses. That's the mode of passion, the mode of ignorance. So the mode of goodness is very purifying, is very empowering, but we need to develop those qualities, getting up in the morning, being clean, studying the scriptures. And one point that is here, which is relevant to Bhishma Dev, is performing one's duty. My spiritual master said one time that this is the main message of the Bhagavad Gita, that you have a duty to perform your dharma, and sticking to it, doing it, even if you don't want to do it, then that's performing your duty, and that's the mode of goodness. And by doing that, then one becomes purified. And it's such an extremely important point in our lives and in our society, because if we're not dedicated to performing our duty, then it just causes insecurity in our lives, in our services, in our relationships, and we can't progress anywhere. And we see in ISKCON that it's not always there, say in marriages, that consciousness to do my duty and stay together, even if it's difficult, even if we're arguing. I made a vow, we got married, it's there, we said we're going to do it, we have to do it. That's duty. And if it breaks up, then it causes so much pain and sorrow and difficulties in our society as a whole. So we can just imagine for Bhishma Dev, it probably wasn't very easy. He was in a particular situation where he was having to try to kill his students. He was attacking his worshipable deity and injuring him, although we said there was some enjoyment there in the Virya Rasa, but still I'm sure it wasn't an easy duty to perform. We know that Bhishma Dev, he got that name because when he was young, Shantanu Maharaj was his father, and Shantanu Maharaj wanted to marry Satyavati. And that's her name, right? Satyavati. And her father, who was a fisherman, said, okay, you can marry my daughter, but only on the condition that her son will be king. And that the problem was that Shantanu already had a son who was Bhishma Dev, and rightfully he would become the king. And so what did Devavrata do, Bhishma Dev at that time? He didn't say, Dad, what are you doing? You're in Maya. Sit down. I'm going to teach you. No, just because of his respect for his father, although it was a questionable situation, you could say in one sense, although he was a king, so he can take more than one wife. Then he said, okay, I immediately take a vow to never get married and have any children, so there won't be a problem, and then you can get married to Satyavati. And that's incredible, because Bhishma Dev was a kshatriya, he was a king. And the kings, they all got married. There's no brahmachari king or celibate king. They got married, that's what they did. And usually they didn't just get married. They had many wives and even more children than just from their wives. It's why they lived an extravagant lifestyle, the kings. They're dealing with the mode of passion. They're in the mode of passion. So they're doing great things. They're very powerful. But at the same time, they have some license for some sense gratification as well. So Bhishma, he had that power. He was the greatest warrior on earth. But at the same time, he had this amazing sense control that I will take that vow just out of respect for my father. And he always followed that vow. And that carried on all the way through his life. One time, Navina Nirada Prabhu was giving class in New Vajradam, Shishivara Gokulananda ki jai, Sitaram Lakshman Hanumanji ki jai. And he was talking about Bhishma Dev. I think it was the first canto at that time. And he was saying about how Bhishma Dev is lying on the bed of arrows on the battlefield, and he's just, blood is drained from his body. He's instructing Yudhishthira. He's waiting for the time for Krishna to come when he's going to leave his body. And he's not complaining. He's not moaning. The Vina Niradipu, he wasn't saying, I don't like it here, take me out of here, I don't like it, I don't want to be here. I don't like this situation, put me in a different situation. And get me a taxi, take me somewhere else. I don't deserve this. You know, why is Krishna doing this to me? I don't like it. Bhishma Dev never said that. He said that this is the situation that I'm in now. He accepted it, and he was very Krishna conscious in that situation. And that's not so easy. Srila Sri Ramaj says that in establishing ISKCON, in establishing Varnashram, the biggest challenge is with devotees, he was saying. And the biggest challenge is for devotees to be satisfied with what they've got and the situation that they're in, and to accept that I'm a temple room cleaner person. That's what I do. I clean the temple. I'm not temple president. I'm not GBC. I'm not a big book distributor or a big class giver or a big kirtan leader. I'm just a simple devotee who cleans the floor, and that's okay. I don't have to be anything else, because it's not about me being Krishna. It's not about me being prominent or important. It's just about me serving in the capacity that I can. And conversely, other devotees who have the capacity to do big things, even though they may be doing big things, just as Bhishma Dev was doing, but we should understand that it's actually not me. I may be the best kirtan leader in ISKCON. I may be the temple president. I may be the coolest, most empowered book distributor in the whole of Bhaktivedanta Manor, but it's not me, it's Krishna who's doing that. Krishna is the ability in man, and as all book distributors can experience, sometimes he gives me that shakti to do it, and sometimes, just like Arjuna, when Krishna had left, he couldn't even defend the queens from a few cowherd men, then sometimes you can't do anything, and Krishna gives us the opportunity to see them. That actually it's just his mercy. So doing our duty, being satisfied in the situation that I'm in, being satisfied with our wives, being satisfied being in the Brahmachari ashram, being satisfied with the simple job that I do outside so I can pay my bills and I can come to the temple, that's very important. That's an important quality of devotees, that they're satisfied and peaceful and a quality of the mode of goodness. Of course, it doesn't mean that in every situation we just accept it. We have to discriminate as well, but it can cause disruption in our society when devotees aren't satisfied with the situation that they're in. So coming to the mode of goodness is very important. Duty is an important part of that. And then we know that the mode of goodness is not the goal necessarily for devotees. In fact, it's not the goal. The goal is to become Krishna conscious and to become situated in Shuddhasattva or transcendental goodness. But you can't come to transcendental goodness from the mode of passion. You can't come to transcendental goodness from the mode of ignorance. We have to go through the mode of goodness. And that doesn't mean that all devotees are supposed to be brahmanas. We have shudras, vaishyas, kshatriyas, brahmanas, and mixtures of all of them in our society. And we have a particular nature which we engage in Krishna service. But because we're devotees, because we're practicing to be devotees, everybody practices a brahminical culture, that we are clean, that we chant, that we come to the temple, that we're vegetarian, that we're disciplined. We're all practicing a brahminical culture because we're trying to be devotees. And then if we link the mode of goodness to Krishna and to Krishna's service, then that becomes transcendental and that becomes Shuddhasattva. So we can see from this pastime and from this verse that life is not always so black and white. And we see in our own lives as well, there's so many twists and turns at every step. And it seems that Krishna enjoys putting more and more of these interesting situations in our past to help us develop our devotion. We see that with Bhishma Dev, he was also in a similar situation. His life was not so easy and not so simple. But the main thing is that in any situation we should be Krishna conscious. And the last point I wanted to make, actually I should have made it earlier, was that when I was talking about Bali Maharaj and Vamana Dev, that Krishna may even engineer such situations that are unjust for his devotee. Like Bali Maharaj, he was exemplary. He even rejected his guru when he gave him not correct instructions. And then what did Vamana Dev do to Bali Maharaj? Somebody remember? Say? Push him down to lower planets. Push him down to lower planets, yeah? Yeah, before that? Tied him up. Tied him up, and he said to Bali Maharaj that for your sin of saying that you're going to give me 3 steps of land and not giving me that, then you're going to have to go to hell. That's what Vamana Dev said to him. And Bali Maharaj was suffering in that situation. It says in the Bhagavatam that he lost all of his luster, he was bound up, he felt bad, you know, I'm like a criminal. But this wasn't really fair, what Vamana Dev was doing. Bali Maharaj had surrendered. He'd given him everything. He'd even rejected his guru. He was giving all of the universe to Vamana Dev. And actually, at that point, Prahlad Maharaj came and he said, okay, Vamana Dev, so that's enough. You know, you don't have to punish him anymore. He surrendered everything. What more can he give? And Vamana Dev did this to glorify Bali Maharaj, that even in this situation, Bali Maharaj's determination didn't waver. He just surrendered to Vamana Dev. Vamana Dev, he could act nicely with Bali Maharaj, he could torture him, he could defame him, he could glorify him. It didn't matter because Bali Maharaj was fixed in his determination to serve. And that is why Vamana Dev did it. Although it seems like mistreatment, and externally it is, sometimes Krishna does that to glorify his devotees. And we shouldn't be secure in the thought that, yeah, maybe he does it to Bali Maharaj. I don't think he'll do it to me. He probably will. My spiritual master said that there will come a point in your life when Krishna will I'm trying to translate it from Hungarian. Anyway, it's difficult to even speak English because all the Hungarian words come to my mind when I speak. When he will take away everything. He'll take away everything from you. He will make you akinchana. He'll take everything away. And we should be prepared for that, because this mood of Bali Maharaj, that whatever Vamana Dev does, it's okay, I surrender. My thing is to surrender. It's Krishna's thing, what he does. Now, I can't control Krishna. He does what he wants to do. But my part is that I give everything to him. Just as Lord Chaitanya says, Ashleshyava Padavatam Panashtumam Adashanan Mahatam Kuru Tuva, that whatever Krishna does, although he's a debauchee, Lampata, I serve him because he is my Lord. And this is the mood that we have to have, whether we're in a good situation, whether we're in a bad situation, whether we're doing something we like, whether we're doing something we don't like, if the devotees are dealing with us correctly, if they're not. But of course, if we can do something in a measured way that can solve a situation, we can do that. But if it's beyond our control, then we just have to depend upon Krishna, that this is your desire, it appears, so this is my situation. And then by being Krishna conscious and developing these qualities of the mode of goodness, and we can also aspire to follow in the footsteps of such great personalities as Bhishma Dev and Bali Maharaj and the others. Okay, I'll finish there. If anybody has any comments or questions or corrections, then I'll be happy to hear.